I'm Nina Borzuki.
I'm Patrick Cox, and you're listening to The World in Words, a podcast about languages and the people who speak them.
And that's right, today, you can tell from the music, we are going to take a trip to Hawaii.
Oh no, it's that music again.
You and me make a guarantee to spread a little aloha around the world.
Come on, Patrick, you don't want to get high with a little aloha today.
Not at all, no. I certainly don't. And just we should say, just in case you don't recognize this music from a previous podcast, it was on in the live show, right? And you tortured me with it then.
Yes.
And you're torturing me and anybody who's listening to this right now.
It's not so bad. But today I have a different story about Hawaii. For listeners who actually didn't listen to the live show or weren't at the live show, you should really go back. It's like two episodes ago.
It was so much fun to do.
It was really fun. But here's a quick recap of the previous story of Hawaii to get a little sort of grounding in what we're going to talk about today. So basically, a coup dethroned the last Hawaiian queen. And after that happened, a law was put onto the books barring Hawaiian, the Hawaiian language, from being used in schools. And that law stayed on the books for 90 years, believe it or not, contributing to the decimation of the language. So by the 1970s, Hawaiian was spoken mainly by elders. And in short, it was dying quickly. But then in the 1980s, a group of language activists began a serious effort to save the language. They formed a Hawaiian lexicon committee to coin new words like computer. And most importantly, they started a Hawaiian language preschool. And that preschool has mushroomed into many, many preschools. And today, actually, the largest group of Hawaiian language learners are children.
Wow, that all sounds really good.
Yeah, it sounds good, except, you know, it's not that simple.
Nothing ever is.
Yeah, I know. I wish it was that simple. But while this group of activists were reviving the Hawaiian language, opening up preschools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, there was, and still is, a small group of native speakers who have never lost the language. They're the ni hao.
Wait a minute. Ni hao. So is that like ni hao, the Chinese word for hello?
No, ni hao.
Totally different. It's got nothing to do with anything Chinese.
No, nothing to do with Chinese at all. Ni hao is actually the name of a privately owned island 17 miles off the coast of the island of Kauai. That's where the ni hao are from. And it's also called ni hao, the island. And this, what you're hearing right now, is the ni hao hula. By the way, and a gentleman by the name of Kaleo is who you hear singing. He's also an ni hao teacher of Hawaiian culture on the island of Kauai.
Wow, and you said it's a privately owned island? I mean, how can that be?
Well, yeah, like, you know, the Oracle billionaire Larry Ellison, he owns the island of Lanai.
Ooh.
Well, the island of Niihau was actually purchased in 1864 by a woman named Elizabeth Sinclair. She was from Scotland, and she bought it from the Hawaiian royal family. And to this day, it remains privately owned by her descendants, the Robinson family.
That is so weird.
I know,
weird.
It is totally wild. And when Elizabeth purchased the land, you know, there were a whole community of Native Hawaiians living on the land, speaking Hawaiian. So she bought an island, but there's a whole bunch of people who live there. And today, the Native Hawaiians of Niihau continue to live on the island, and they continue to speak Hawaiian. And in fact, members of the Robinson family who grew up on Niihau are also fluent in Hawaiian, which is a kind of interesting fact. What I've been told is, you know, the isolation of the island and the people on the island has kept the language alive and thriving and a home language. So it's their first language. It's not like everybody speaks English at home and kind of Hawaiian. It's Hawaiian is the language of the island.
Wow. Wow. It's amazing to think this is part of the United States.
Yeah.
And can you go to Niihau?
You can go to Ni'ihau, kind of. I mean, you have to be invited by the Robinson family, so, or by someone from the Ni'ihau community. So it's really, really hard. And from what I understand, the island is actually very undeveloped. There's no electricity. There's no real roads. There's no cars. There's a church and a school and not a whole heck of a lot else. The Robinsons, however, they used to employ the Ni'ihau residents on the island. They had a cattle ranch, and they actually had a charcoal factory on the island. But the ranch and the factory have since closed.
So what do the locals do now? I mean, if it's a private island, there's no tourist industry or anything. I mean, what do they do?
Well, that's kind of one of the issues. So over the last few decades, the Ni'ihau have started to move from the island to the neighboring island of Kauai. And this is actually where our story begins, at a little park in the town of Kekaha on the island of Kauai. Kekaha is at the very end of the single highway that traverses the island of Kauai. The park is across the highway from the beach. It's a really beautiful view, but despite that fantastic view and the abundance of palm trees, it's actually really a fairly typical American park. There's a big lawn, there's a plastic jungle gym. There's those metal barbecues, you know, those metal barbecues that are like affixed to the ground, and two or three cinder block type pavilions providing shade for picnic tables. This is where I meet Keao Naismith under one of those cinder block pavilions.
Good to meet you.
Yeah, and not exactly presentable.
I feel like in Hawaii most of the time it's okay to wear no shoes. And like to...
Exactly. In flip-flops, hair wet from the ocean, Keao is the epitome of the laid-back Hawaiian. He's in his 40s, and his story is a familiar one here.
As I was growing up, I used to wonder, and I used to ask my mom once in a while, how come we don't speak Hawaiian? How come our family doesn't speak Hawaiian? As I was getting older and becoming a teenager, it was on my mind.
Keao was a precocious, stubborn kid who was, frankly, lucky. His grandmother was a native speaker.
And on weekends, I'll go visit my grandma, who was living on Oahu at the time. And I would tell her, speak to me in Hawaiian. She goes, yeah, right, you won't get it. I was like, no, just speak to me in Hawaiian. So she started speaking to me in Hawaiian.
Halemau'u.
Yeah.
I don't remember the moment when it shifted. I don't remember the moment when it just turned on for me. All I remember is I wasn't, then suddenly I was.
And Keao was doubly lucky. Not only did he have time to learn from his grandmother, growing up here in Kekaha on Kauai, many of his neighbors were Ni'ihau, and they still spoke Hawaiian at home.
My best friends, the Ni'ihau kids, didn't speak a word of English, but we're best friends playing, you know, we're best playmates. That's just how kids are, I guess.
So you heard it growing up a lot.
It was heard every day. We hear it every day.
But while Keao was becoming bilingual, equally at ease in his English and Hawaiian speaking worlds, he watched as his monolingual Ni'ihau friends suffered in school because of the Hawaiian language.
The way it had been for decades here was at the public school, if you were a Ni'ihau kid and couldn't speak English, you were put into special ed.
Just straight off the bat.
It was automatic. You were just Ni'ihau special ed.
Because they didn't speak English.
Because they didn't speak English. Not because they had mental problems. You can imagine it had been fomenting the stigma about Ni'ihau people. Ni'ihau people are special ed people. Even when parents would go and challenge the school, my kid is not retarded. My kid is perfectly capable of learning, but just doesn't speak English. I was like, oh, well, you know, that's how we do things here, and you go special ed.
By the early 1990s, Ni'ihau parents had enough. If the Department of Education was going to continue to ignore their children and place them in special ed, they would just take matters into their own hands.
And they were finally disgusted with it enough that they pulled their kids together. They met together first as parents, pulled their kids out and met right here in the middle of the day. Walked on campus, pulled their kids out, came here.
Right here to the park, to these cinder block pavilions where Keao and I are sitting. This is where Ni'ihau parents set up their own makeshift school. It was a powerful moment.
To me, I think it was the most happiest day of my life.
Luana Kanahele was one of those parents. She pulled her daughter out of the Department of Education, or how she calls it, DOE school, in Kekaha, and marched to the park.
we are making a change. You know, we're going to change things. And as a parent, we have to do something because the neglect of our children. And just because their first language is Hawaiian, does that make you a ELL, which they call it, what is that, second language learner? Come on, you're standing on what island? You're standing on the Hawaiian island. Can't I speak my own language? And who are you to label me as a second language?
It wasn't a large group at first, just a dozen or so kids.
We didn't have pencils and papers. No, we didn't have folders, we didn't have books. We didn't ever even have crayon and glue. But that was the best moment, just to see them sitting, you know, just listening to these two teachers talking to them in Hawaiian. All in their own language, no English. You could see every one of them, their eyes were like, whoa, telling them stories, oral history of who they were and what they are, until pencil and paper came. I can't forget that day.
The parents taught their kids in the cinder block pavilion for months, and while the pencil and paper did come, it wasn't easy to figure out what came next. What they didn't know then is that they were at the start of a movement to redefine education for their children, a Hawaiian education that included the language. And to do that, they needed to apply to become a charter school.
It didn't happen overnight. It took a few years to have our charter and to be recognized. You know, it wasn't easy. It was a struggle.
The Niihau families got help developing their charter school program from language activists at the University of Hawaii in Hilo, really far south in the island chain from Kauai. And eventually, the Niihau opened their own school. So, all good, right? Except there were disagreements within the Niihau community. Should classroom instruction be in Hawaiian, their native tongue, or English? The university folks were pushing for total Hawaiian immersion, while some in the Niihau community were thinking, wait, hold on, we speak Hawaiian at home, it's actually English that we need.
English? Yeah. Wait a minute. English divided the community?
Yes.
I thought they walked out of public school because of discrimination against the Hawaiian language.
Well, yes, they did. And you heard from Kanahele earlier about, like, their feelings of discrimination about speaking Hawaiian. And they still felt like, you know, they want Hawaiian to be a part of the education. They didn't want their kids to stop speaking the language in school or on the playground. But actually, when it came to deciding how they wanted to educate their kids, some Niihau parents questioned whether Hawaiian immersion, that is, all instruction in Hawaiian, was the best way. This concept for Hawaiian immersion, as developed by the University of Hawaii, the folks that were advising the Niihau, didn't actually fit within the Niihau situation, according to Keao Naismith.
Their concept is, we've been separated from our language, we need it now, and this is how we're going to get it. That is not the Niihau people's situation. Parents here were like, I mean, we speak Hawaiian better than you, in fact. And it's English that we lack. And we do want Hawaiian. It's not that we don't want Hawaiian, but we need the English. But the immersion concept is no English until fourth grade and only an hour a day, if that. And these guys are like, actually, we need more English than that.
So what happened?
Oh, what happened? Well, that initial charter school split into two different schools. It was, and still is, when I talk to people, a very painful event in the community's history. I mean, the Niihau are not enormous community. They're a very small community. And it was a painful moment, frankly, for the Hawaiian revitalization movement. Because in some ways, what this discussion and what the argument highlighted was a deeper issue in language revitalization, which is what I wanted to talk about with you. That is the complicated relationship between native speakers and second language learners. So what happens when second language learners become the majority speaker? Where does that leave native speakers, especially in the situation of Hawaii, where the Niihau aren't all just older elders who are dying off? You know, this is an entire community. There are young Niihau who speak the language. You can understand it's a very divisive topic. Here's Keao again.
Currently, I see at least two different spheres of the Hawaiian language in existence. One is that of the native speakers. The other is second language speakers who reinforce their brand of the language by hanging out with each other and not with native speakers. So for the vast majority of Hawaiian learners today, there is zero native speaker influence in their learning. Zero. So they have now created, really invented a form of what they're calling Hawaiian amongst themselves.
Keo calls this University Hawaiian or Neo Hawaiian, and he calls the Niihau Hawaiian traditional Hawaiian.
That sounds a little disparaging, frankly. I mean, it sounds like he doesn't really believe that this Neo Hawaiian is a natural language.
Well, I mean, I think it's a little more nuanced than that. I just think that he sees two Hawaiians emerging. And there actually are subtle differences in pronunciation and word choice between the way folks, you know, coming out of Hilo are speaking the language and the way the Niihau speak the language. For example, Hawaiian has a lot of Ks, as you can hear from everybody's name, Kaleo, Keiau. But there's in the words, there's a lot of Ks. And the Niihau, when they pronounce a lot of words, they use Ts instead of Ks. So there's like subtle, and they speak a lot faster, and there is actually differences you can hear between the two. And I hate to use the word dialects because I know I'm going to get a ton of angry comments.
The two varieties.
Two varieties of Hawaiian. So there are these subtle differences, and these differences become even more pronounced as new words are created and come into the Hawaiian lexicon. So remember, the Hawaiian Lexicon Committee was developed by the folks out of the University of Hawaii. Keiau actually was a member of the committee while he was at the University of Hawaii on the Big Island in Hilo. And he himself is actually responsible for coining some of the new Hawaiian words. But as the committee coined new word after new word, this responsibility just began weighing on him, especially when it came to adopting new words when a word was already in use among native speakers. So take the word cell phone, for example. Niihau speakers have a word for cell phone.
They call it keleponahele. Kelepona is a Hawaiianized form of telephone, which is from the 1800s, you know, when it originally came over. Keleponahele. Hele means to go. Keleponahele, mobile phone.
But the lexicon committee came up with a new term.
They made up a term, kelula, cellular, which is gobbledygook to native speakers.
But isn't it necessary when you're revitalizing a language to make up some new words? You know, words for things that didn't exist in the 1800s, like computer.
I mean, there is a situation, like, when you're trying to revitalize a language, I mean, what do you do? So, for example, is there a word for computer in traditional Hawaiian?
Well, like, and then computer is not a traditional thing, right?
So, right, so do you just use the English word, or, like, what do you
we
do?
We looked at a number of different things. Before I got on the committee, they had already settled on a term for computer, a couple of different terms. One is a Hawaiianization of the English word computer. So kamepiula was one option.
Kamapiula. What is kamapiula? It's just a rhyming word for computer. So they had to be creative of all these Hawaiian words for all this English word. Because there is no Hawaiian word for all this English word to begin with.
Again, that's Luana Kenahele. Today, she is vice principal of one of the Niihau charter schools. Unlike Keiau, the new words actually don't bother her all that much. They're more amusing than anything else. Let the committee make up new words is kind of her attitude.
They're the professor.
Yeah.
Yeah? We're talking about people with degrees.
PhDs.
They can create whatever and however they want. And you know, for me as a native Hawaiian, am I going to stand in their way because they created all this word?
No,
I won't. Because if it's as close as computer as kamapiura, that's fine with me. Because that's not in my dialect. That's in your dialect.
So do you even consider it Hawaiian?
No.
Wow, I thought she was going to say yes then. Like, she's okay with all of these new words being invented, but then she says, it's not Hawaiian?
I know. I was surprised as well.
And what about the professors? I know you spent some time in Hilo, right, at the University of Hawaii.
Yes.
And we played it in the live show where you were talking with the, quote, godfather of the Hawaiian revitalization movement. What was he called? Larry Kimura?
Larry Kimura.
The lexicon committee guy?
Yes. He helped start the lexicon committee.
Right. So what did he have to say about
this? Well, he told me that they have tried to get input from the Niihau community to bring them in as part of the process of creating these new words.
Our first Hawaiian official lexicon committee in 1987 comprised all, the members were all native speakers. I think there were seven of them. We said we will try that out. It was very difficult because it was uncomfortable for the native speakers to encounter words like, you know, evolution or even, you know, air conditioning. They would talk about it, they would explain it. And so it became like they were telling us a definition in Hawaiian. It's a machine that does this and this and this and this. And so that's the definition, but not the word.
So it didn't really work very well. And Larry was frank about the fact that adopting English words isn't the answer, and having long definitions to describe something new isn't the answer, and that he really feels to keep Hawaiian a living language, the committee needs to keep creating these new words for things like cell phone, computer, internet, you know, all the modern things that come into our life. In fact, there are so many words to tackle that the lexicon committee itself can't even keep up.
We cannot meet the demand. We cannot create all the words that will need to be created, so the speakers will.
And they do create new words. Second language speakers are coming up with new words on their own for things, you know, like texting. This, as you might imagine, sort of annoys Keao.
Okay, so one that is a big pet peeve of mine that second language speakers have created and now is just absolutely infused into that community is kuke, which is their term for cute. Which cute is not a new invention. It's not a new concept. Of course, native speakers have ways of expressing that, but it ain't kuke, I can tell you that. You know, there are all these short phrases and words that we like to throw out that really express the way a native speaker perceives of something that is cute, a dog, a kid.
What are some of the ways?
It depends. And so, like, if you're seeing, like, a little baby does something really cute, you know, gives a flower to somebody, Oh, aloha no iki iki iki. But second language speakers, my colleagues there, they go, oh, kuke, because they're thinking in English.
They're thinking in English. That seems to be at the root of what bothers him.
Yeah, I mean, it is at the root of what bothers him. Keo is very much concerned that the native speakers of Hawaiian, the Niihau community, are being largely ignored and their sort of influence of the language is diminished. And, you know, I think that they're revered within the second language. I know that they're revered within the second language learner community, but I don't know how much there is of a fusion between like what's happening within the Niihau community and within the larger growing community of second language learners, the like language revitalization movement. I didn't get a sense of like how much integration. In fact,
it's such a weird split that between those two. I mean, just listening to this, I was just thinking of, and there's no way that this is the same at all, but I was thinking that, like, with the English language, there are also now more second language speakers of English in the world than there are first language speakers. They outnumber us first language speakers. But what they don't have is any kind of monopoly over the future direction of the language. They may, in the end, just by sheer, you know, numbers, have far greater influence over it than they have done in the past. But, you know, for a start, they don't all speak the same native language. They speak thousands of different native languages. But I'm just trying to imagine, like, if suddenly, you know, the English language dictionaries, the most important dictionaries for English and lexicons and all of that were for some reason magically all in the hands of people from India, and we native speakers felt overlooked because people in India, who were such wonderful linguists and speak English among many other languages, but speak a very different type of English to us, if they sort of coined all of these words, which we don't use, well, I might be outraged.
I mean, it's hard to make that comparison because the one difference is, you know, most of the folks that are second language learners of Hawaiian, they're Hawaiians as well. You know, like they're native Hawaiians, like their ancestors spoke Hawaiian. They have a sincere desire to like see the language stay alive and continue to thrive. I think what is more interesting, it's a balance of power. The university folks have this powerful institution behind them. That's their advantage. Do you know?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. It's a control issue. And I know that it's true that linguists don't, you know, they say that language is basically the way that people speak and, you know, you can't really control language and it's a natural thing and all of that. But there's no question of doubt that with certain smaller languages, something like a lexicon committee means a huge amount.
Yes. The thing about the Hawaiian Lexicon Committee, it's like they have just created this committee and have started doing this work because it was needed. And so they're no more official than, you know, the Niihau speakers. They could develop their own lexicon committee. So it's kind of just...
But they're small.
They're small,
tiny group.
They're marginalized, a lot of them. I have a feeling are, you know, low income. The schools that I went to were mostly like free and reduced lunch. You know, there's a lot of economic issues that play into this. I mean, that's what frustrates Keao, I think, is that he sees all of these disparities and that he sees that ultimately what it's doing is, you know, creating these like kind of two different, from his point of view, versions of Hawaiian.
Natural evolution of a language occurs among a community of native speakers, such as Niihau speakers. As time goes on, as a group of native speakers, they just settle into particular ways of speaking. That's completely different than because English dictates that there must be a term. You know, that's not the same thing. So evolution versus engineering of a language, to me, that's the real question here.
He has no issue with English words coming into Hawaiian. Like, he says, if native speakers use the word computer instead of kamaputer, that's fine. Like,
it's less condescending than if they kind of Hawaiianize the English
the word. And he says, like, you know, if why are we going to come up with a word for lasagna when it's not like a Hawaiian dish? It sort of makes me feel like, you know, like up in Quebec City, they're crazy about, you know, one English word slipping in. But at the same time, you can see from their point of view in Quebec City, it's really hard to be a minority language within a majority world, especially Hawaiian even more so because there are so few speakers and that English is just so dominant.
That's what people who English speakers often just don't recognize, that other languages do need protections, like it or not, because otherwise English would just roll all over them.
And when you said before they're thinking in English, I think that is the underlying thing that bothers Keao the most, because it's not just English's influence on words like kamaputer that sounds sort of like an English word, but it's English's influence on the Hawaiian accent, or what he calls the university Hawaiian accent. When I first talked to Keao over the phone and we talked and I was like, I'm coming to Hawaii and I you know, want to meet and interview you and blah, blah, blah. He says, okay, come to Hawaii. When you land in Honolulu at the airport, just listen to the greeting, the Hawaiian greeting at the airport. Standing at the Honolulu airport. Lots of folks going by with their luggage, waiting for the Welcome to Hawaii announcement. Waiting patiently.
Aloha e nā makamaka ki pōmai, he kohua mōku lele kau aina o Honolulu. E nā ohua e haʻalele ana, no o kou no ka maluhia o ko holo ana a hoʻi hōmai.
I have a hard time getting past her accent. It's like nails on a chalkboard to me. And then, what I usually do is I reach really fast for my headphones, plug it in my ears and turn it on super loud so I don't have to listen to it. It's ridiculous. And the things that she says, no o kou no ka maluhia, to you belongs the peace of that. Who talks like that? what the hell kind of a greeting is that? What a ridiculous thing to say. And why didn't you guys bother to go grab a native speaker to come and do the talking anyway? And I absolutely believe that it's native speakers who should be driving the discourse and who are the absolute authorities and have the last say.
And to me, this is kind of the bittersweet irony. So language, as we know it, is a living, breathing, ever-evolving thing. And Hawaiian activists have succeeded in reviving the language. I mean, they've succeeded so much so that new speakers are now creating their own new words, that you can hear things at the airport like a Hawaiian greeting, full on in Hawaiian. But at the same time, you know, some of the Ni'ihau, Hawaiian native speakers, are feeling left out of the equation.
Right, right. I mean, there seems to be like tremendous value in all of this stuff that has taken place. I mean, people are arguing over the language, which suggests that it has immense value. But aside from that, I mean, okay, but they are arguing on the other hand. And presumably that means that, you know, the future of Hawaiian, what path it's going to take and if it's going to take it. I mean, there's still a question. I mean, I wonder if there's the silver lining to all of these arguments.
Well, I think if there's any silver lining, it is the fact that they are arguing, which means there's a language to argue about. And that, I think, is an important thing to note. I mean, it's in much better shape than many other indigenous languages in the United States, many of which we are reporting on right now. And one of the highlights of my trip was visiting, I visited both Ni'ihau schools, and one of the Ni'ihau schools, the students take hula for their physical education for PE. And Kaleo, the man we heard in the beginning of the podcast playing the ukulele, he was actually one of the kids who walked out of the Department of Education school back in the 90s. Oh. And now here he is full circle. He is teaching Ni'ihau hula as part of a Hawaiian education in a Hawaiian school. So despite all of the arguments and the painful struggles that Ni'ihau have had to get to this point, they have two schools and they are teaching their kids the Hawaiian way. And that, I think, is a huge success.
No, because I like the chorus and the melody just stuck in your head, so you gotta keep on doing it one by one. Okay, Yuri. Makokau. He na ni ni I hau I kala velo.
That's all for this week.
Let us know what you think. Tweet us at LingoPod. I'm at Patri Cox. That's P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X.
I'm at Porzuki. That's P-O-R-Z-U-C-K-I.
And please, wherever you listen to us, please leave a review. It makes a huge difference.
And as always, thanks so much for listening.
We'll see you next time.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence, and by PRI's The World.